What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Well, this episode of America Trends is going to be out of this world, John.
Out of this world.
I know. Well, John, I'll tell you, this one really fascinated me. By the way, I'm Larry Rifkin, and that voice you hear so comfortably and warm and inviting is John Krofcik. And John, when you think about it, I have loved the space program here in America over the years, and I can remember where I was watching that landing on the moon in 1969. Can you remember that?
I can. Just amazing stuff.
I was with a bunch of friends. We were all together at a woman's house. I will tell you, it was such a signal event in all of our lives that you had to remember it. And what pride it brought to the United States.
It really did. It really brought the country together for something really good, really exciting.
And again, it was one of those things where we had to catch up with the Soviet Union. We were behind. They launched Sputnik in 1957. And we said, wow, we have got to get together here and figure out what we have to do to make ourselves more scientifically advanced. And John Kennedy, he pushed us to find our way in space and said, we are going to beat the Russians to the moon.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. But since then, our NASA seems to have lost its way. It had a lot of failures.
And of course, the losses like the Challenger, and that brought us together in another way for another reason. But we still believed that America had a role in space. John, do you think we have really documented the scientific breakthroughs that have come about because of the space program?
You know, that's a very good question. I mean, so much has come about because the computers, just think of the computers they were using then and the amazing power we have today because it all started there. And you're absolutely right. It's incredible to think about.
Well, I think a lot of people think, it was all about Tang or something
Tang,
else like
there
that.
You go.
But I remember when we had on our program Neil deGrasse Tyson, who runs the Hayden Planetarium in New York, of course. And he said that there were so many advances, and he named them. I can't name them, but there were remarkable achievements. If you looked around your home, you couldn't be but impressed that many of the things that we consider so necessary today began because of the space program.
It's amazing. It really is. It's incredible.
But then why did we kind of let it take a back seat? Why?
Well, we went to the moon, and we went to the moon quite a few times. And then, like anything, budgets got tight and
Well, we went to war in places. We spent a lot of money there. And we lost sight of what it was that we were trying to do to show that America had preeminence in science and technology. And the space program was a great symbol of that. Fortunately for us, John, there still is a NASA. I mean, it's still there.
There is, yep.
Now, it keeps going back to the International Space Station, and that same Neil deGrasse Tyson says, we're going to go where man has been many times before.
Yes.
But we're even hitching a ride with the Russians to get there, John. So what kind of achievement is that?
I know. It's terrible.
But along comes Jeff Bezos.
Yes.
Elon Musk, Richard Branson, and others, but they're key to this story that we're going to bring to you today. And they are the new space barons.
Yeah, it's really kind of an exciting time to see how these guys do. Of course, Elon Musk's put his, what's the name of his?
Tesla.
Tesla. Put his Tesla out there. So, I mean, it's really kind of an exciting time to be around to see how these guys do it.
Well, I've got to believe that a lot of people listening have heard, they've caught a glimpse on the news of something that Elon Musk is doing, or that, in fact, Jeff Bezos spends every Wednesday focused on space and not getting that package to your door. And so he's focused on this, that they love Star Trek and Star Wars, and that's what got them involved. But thank goodness for these space barons, because they are challenging America to stay preeminent in space. And they've got dreams, John, big dreams. They want to colonize Mars. They want to get back to the moon. They want to do this, that, and the other. Now, I know a lot of people think, oh, this is all a pipe dream. But John, they're spending billions of dollars. They're working with NASA. They are now really in the lead. It's a remarkable story that I don't think people really, truly understand.
No, I don't. I believe even that Elon Musk's restocking the space station with reusable rockets.
Well, that is one of the great innovations in all of this we learned, John, with our podcast that we're about to bring to you. And that is that their great innovation is like, well, why are we throwing away these, rockets? We use them and then they just blow up on it reentry. Why aren't we, in fact, reusing them? So that's one of the innovations of these private entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. I think the future is going to bring us, well, who knows, maybe Mars.
Well, I think that's what they're most focused on, the red planet. And we'll talk about that in another podcast that we will bring to you in coordination with this one. But we start off with giving you a background on what's going on with these space barons, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the quest to colonize the cosmos. And again, I want to thank them for what they're doing. And I want to thank Christian Davenport, who's an incredible reporter about the space program. And he's got a great new book, The Space Barons, and you'll hear it only here on America Trends. With us on the line is Christian Davenport. The book is called The Space Barons. And I guess we beg the question, in a sense, if I don't ask it right at the outset, because we're talking about all these private entrepreneurs in space, what's happened to America's publicly financed manned space program?
Well, right now, it doesn't exist. The space shuttle was retired in 2011 after a 30-year run, but the United States at this moment does not have the capability of flying humans to space from U.S. soil, and there's sort of a cruel irony there in that we pay Russia to do it, and that costs something like $80 million a seat for them to fly our astronauts to the International Space Station. That, however, soon could change, possibly this year. I think a lot of people think more likely next year, where NASA has contracted with Boeing and SpaceX to fly American astronauts to the International Space Station as sort of like a taxi service. And the idea there is that NASA would get out of what's known as low Earth orbit and be able to focus on deep space and have these contractors, these companies, take over that service and fly NASA's astronauts to the International Space Station.
How have we let our program atrophy in the way that we have?
Well, I mean, there's sort of a long history here. I mean, in the heyday, of course, we look back to the Apollo era, you know, starting in 1961 with John F. Kennedy's speeches declaring that we're going to go to the moon within the decade. And, you know, miraculously, we did in that Cold War space race with the Soviet Union. But a lot of people don't realize that funding for NASA and the space program actually started to decrease even before the first men walked on the moon. And interest in the Apollo program was starting to wane as well. As you know, we kept going to the moon and repeating the same task over and over again. A lot of people look at Richard Nixon and sort of blame him and say, you know, he's the reason why we didn't go, you know, further, and he's the one who killed the space program. But polls from the era show that the United States public actually had lost interest in going to space. After Apollo, it was sort of a compromise where they had to figure out what they were going to do next. And while a lot of people, including Gene Cernan, who was the last man to walk on the moon, had thought, you know, that the country would be on Mars within by the end of the century, they decided to go with the space shuttle. And the idea was to build a reusable, affordable spacecraft, you know, that would make space travel more efficient, even though we were just going to low Earth orbit and eventually to the International Space Station. But, you know, that I think in a lot of ways, for as amazing as the shuttle was reusable, but it didn't, you know, achieve the affordability. And as amazing as the International Space Station is, some people say it's the most impressive engineered object ever made, it never did quite capture the attention of the moon. And, you know, the moon is 250,000 miles away. The International Space Station's about 250 miles away. It's just not as ambitious. I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson who said, you know, in going to the International Space Station, we're going in, you know, low Earth orbit, we're going where we've gone many times before. And now we're in this era where you've got these billionaires and, investing in space, trying to make it more accessible, more reliable, some of the original goals of the shuttle program. And we're in sort of a new era in space, one sort of, you know, not just dominated by NASA, but actually the government's monopoly on space beginning to end and seeding to the private sector, and that's what I wanted to sort of capture in the book.
And you do. The space barons, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the quest to colonize the cosmos. And of course, Mr. Bezos, inspired, as I learned from your book, by Star Trek, and Elon Musk by Star Wars, are they filling the void?
They're starting to. I mean, you know, SpaceX particularly, if you look at, you know, and just in terms of reigniting interest in space, I mean, they've done that. And in space, I mean, space is suddenly cool again. And it's not just the launches of these rockets and sort of the celebrity Elon Musk billionaire entrepreneur behind them. But, you know, he more recently had a launch of the Falcon Heavy rocket, which put a Tesla, you know, ruby red convertible into space with a mannequin named Starman. And we saw those images of that car, you know, in orbit, you know, passing the Earth with Earth in the background. And, you know, from that perspective, it really has reignited interest in space and, you know, their abilities to innovate and to do things that nobody thought possible, like, for example, landing and reusing their rockets. And that's something that Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin did with their suborbital vehicle, the New Shepard, which goes, you know, up and then comes straight back down. But they were able last year to launch and land the same rocket, I think it was five times in a row. SpaceX does the same thing with its Falcon 9, although it goes to orbit, so it's an even more difficult and more challenging landing. So in addition to, you know, sort of reigniting interest in space, they really have taken some significant steps forward in terms of the technology and in terms of their achievement and in terms of doing things in a market that, you know, nobody thought it would be possible for the private sector to do. And, you know, let's face it, with SpaceX in particular, they've had the benefit of, you know, significant public-private partnerships with NASA and significant investments in their company from the private sector. But I think it's, you know, very clear that the culture at SpaceX and the culture at NASA are very different, and they've been really pushing and almost single-handedly, you know, reviving the industry.
We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All right. Well, that dispels that myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah. That's right, where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct message us
news
at Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two, and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends.
Christian, why is it that I want our country to be involved in this and not necessarily only private entrepreneurs? And you're saying that there is cooperation. But why is it that I feel that way? Is it because of the way NASA brought us all together as a nation and we had national goals that went far beyond our imagination? What is it about that? Am I the only one?
No, I think a lot of people share that, you know, and we think about those moments, you know, the moment of, you know, Apollo 11 landing on the moon and, you know, those images of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walking on the moon and, you know, everyone gathered around their black and white televisions and Walter Cronkite, you know, even to rubbing his eyes and, you know, in disbelief. Those were moments that, you know, sort of transcended NASA. I mean, that was something, you know, sort of a moment for the entire nation. And, you know, that's the way, you know, as a whole, we sort of come around it. But since then, you know, there have been amazing triumphs. I mean, even outside of human spaceflight, of landing rovers on Mars, for example. But the other sort of big moments that, you know, that have brought us together collectively as a nation since the Apollo era, frankly, have been negative ones. They've been the explosions, the two explosions of the space shuttles, and one in 1986 and the other in 2003. And so, you know, I think there was sort of the contrast to Apollo 11, where instead of it being a moment of triumph, it was a moment of failure and defeat and mourning and grief. And, you know, which leads to sort of the question, you know, can the private industry, if the government struggled as it did, because, you know, the saying is that space is so hard, if the government struggled with it the way it has, you know, can the private sector be trusted to do this?
Absolutely. And let's break down the motivations of some of the individuals that you highlight in your book. And let's start with Jeff Bezos. What is his goal in all of this? And is there a financial return expected, or is this just because of his love and passion for science fiction?
So the ultimate long-term goal, I mean, looking out many, many generations is, you know, as he says, to have millions of people living and working in space, to sort of extend humanity, not to a specific planet or a specific destination, but just to be out in space among the stars. And the idea is that ultimately it's to preserve the Earth. You know, Earth is limited in its resources. Our population is growing. Our demands for energy are growing. We have limited resources here on space, on Earth, that we're going, that we're sort of burning through at an increasingly fast pace. In space, there are, you know, unlimited resources, uninterrupted solar power, resources on asteroids that can be refined and used for energy uses on Earth. In the short term, that's sort of the long-term goal for Blue Origin. In the short term, what they want to be able to do, and this is true for SpaceX as well, is to create an architecture where there is just making space much more accessible, making it more affordable, more reliable, more like just sort of commercial airline travel, where you can get up there. You can't do that now today. It's too hard. It's too dangerous. It's too expensive. You know, there's something like 550 people who have ever been to space. It's a very small number of people, and they want to just build that infrastructure to get to space. I mean, Jeff talks about when he built Amazon, all of that infrastructure was already there, right? The cables were there for the internet, laid by the telephone companies. There was the postal service that was already in place that could deliver his books. He could do a remote payment through credit cards. That was all there. And so he could, and, you know, and any startup could come along and, you know, some kid in their garage could start an internet company. You can't do that today in space because the barrier to entry is too high. And both Jeff and Elon and you know, these other entrepreneurs like Richard Branson and Paul Allen just want to lower that bar and make it more accessible and really push the state of the art.
Now, Elon Musk, I learned from your book, he really has another idea, which is eventual extinction event, and he is worried about that here on Earth. His solution, find another planet to live on. So is that really what he's thinking about?
Absolutely. You know, he's worried about an extinction event like an asteroid hitting the Earth and having humanity go the way of the dinosaur. I mean, you can think of it as you would back up your hard drive. You have all your data there. Well, humanity is really exists in one place. And if something were to happen to Earth, we'd have no place to go. Has been focusing on Mars. That's been sort of the goal for him and SpaceX since the very beginning. And talks a lot about, you know, not just having a few people there, but really, you know, colonies of people that are on Mars. But again, that's sort of the long-term goal. In order to get there, there are a lot of steps and a lot of challenges just making, you know, space much more accessible and routine. And more recently, has been talking, as Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin have, about looking at the moon first and the moon as a stepping stone that then gets you further out into space and to Mars.
The United States government, to the extent that it is working with these companies, does it imagine one of them becoming the winner in this event, or any of the other players that you mentioned, like Paul Allen or Richard Branson? Is it betting on any of these individuals?
Well, I think they ultimately want all of them to succeed, and the competition is good, and that could help the United States government. You know, at this point, NASA has really spent a lot of money helping SpaceX. The SpaceX got big contracts to fly cargo to the International Space Station, which it's been doing. It has a contract, as we talked about earlier, to fly astronauts to the space station. So NASA, just by itself, has invested several billion dollars into SpaceX. SpaceX also competes and has won a few contracts from the Pentagon to launch national security satellites into space. So there's investment there. But ultimately, I think the Pentagon and NASA want to have a lot of options, you know, a lot of companies that they could turn to for help with these kinds of services. We focus a lot on the launch providers and the rockets, but there's this other industry that's now starting to come up for building habitats. And there's a company called Bigelow Aerospace that, you know, builds habitats that expand, sort of are filled with air and blow up once they get out into space. And they're made with like a Kevlar-like material. And they're already looking to the day sort of beyond the government operating the International Space Station and creating sort of a space, you know, a place for researchers to go, but it could be for tourists to go as well. So, you know, it was the government that helped stand up some of these companies, although, you know, to some extent, Blue Origin, while it has has partnered with the government, has taken far less money. I think it's only, you know, 25, 30 million, something like that, from the government. It's been almost exclusively financed by Jeff Bezos' fortune. But they're now starting to sign up customers and reaching out to the government that it would want to partner with as well.
I would imagine a lot of people listening to this might say to themselves, well, is this just a passing fad or a fancy on the part of these individuals? Because we think of Elon Musk being very involved in battery technology and Tesla, and we think that Jeff Bezos has his hands full running Amazon and being one of the big four these days in terms of technology. So how much time do they spend on all of this?
So Elon splits his time really between SpaceX and Tesla, but of course has got the Boring Company that he wants to make tunnels and Neuralink, and he spends a lot, you know, sort of doing human machine teaming, and it talks a lot about the dangers of artificial intelligence. Jeff Bezos spends when he's in Seattle one day a week at Blue Origin. On Wednesday. Wednesdays are for space. And, you know, but I think that for Jeff in particular, and this is true with Elon too, but Jeff is really, really passionate about space. And he's, you know, he has talked about how, you know, Amazon for him was this lottery ticket that he won and, you know, gave him this great fortune that he now uses in order to fund Blue Origin. And it's been, you know, almost all of his own money doing that. And that sort of shows you the, how passionate he is about it and how dedicated he is about it. And, you know, and I told him when I was trying to get him to participate in the book, I said, the world, you know, sees you through the lens of Amazon, you know, which obviously makes sense. But I said, but I think to really understand you, the American public and, you know, and the world should also needs to see you through the lens of space, because I think that's obviously a huge passion of yours. And, you know, I think you can make the argument maybe that he's even more passionate about space and Blue Origin than Amazon, though I'm sure he would deny that publicly. But, you know, to show you, for example, the lengths, you know, and the depths of his passion and interest in space, you know, and I recount this in a chapter in the book, he hired a team of some of the best deep sea explorers, you know, that money could buy, sort of this international team. And they went out on this expedition in 2013 to find the and recover the engines from the Saturn V rocket that flew the Apollo astronauts to the moon in the late 60s. And, you know, these are bits of metal and steel that have been, you know, wasting away on the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean because, of course, they were from the first stage, which propelled the rocket into space and then fell into the ocean. And Jeff personally was on board this expedition for 3 weeks. He was with his parents came with him, his brother, his brother-in-law, and they did find those F-1 engines and recovered them. I mean, and if you want to get a sense of how much he cares about it, I think that nothing says it more than that, that he would go to such lengths to, you know, recover what for him, you know, to you or me, we may look at those and go like, well, it's, you know, it belongs in a scrapyard, but for him, they belong in a museum, and where these really important historical and cultural and, you know, scientific artifacts.
Absolutely. The book is called The Space Barons by Christian Davenport. We're talking primarily about Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. There are others in this game, but let me continue with the two of these individuals. You do a great job of comparing and contrasting them stylistically. How important is showmanship in all of this to keep our attention focused on it?
Well, for Elon and SpaceX, that has been, you know, incredibly important. I mean, you know, they had to break into the market, and they, and particularly in Washington, and they launched a lobbying campaign and a legal campaign. They had to show their technical prowess, the fact that they could build a rocket and fly to orbit successfully. But another part of it was just getting, you know, NASA's attention, the government's attention, and the public's attention. And Elon has been brilliant at doing that. You know, and we saw it just the other month with the launch of the Falcon Heavy and that Roadster in space. I mean, that was, I think, a really important moment. I mean, we talk about the Earthrise photograph that the crew of, I think it was Apollo 8 took of, you know, seeing the Earth from a distance and partly in shadow. And that, you know, really resonated with the American people. To some extent, that picture of the Tesla in space is that kind of cultural touchstone for a new generation. But it's something that Elon has been doing from the very beginning. It's not a new thing. You know, he does it with Tesla. He, even before I launched a rocket, paraded a model of his Falcon 1 rocket into Washington along the National Mall, you know, as sort of a stunt to get people's attention. And, you know, he's had great success with it. It's also backfired, frankly. He's, you know, He tends to overpromise, particularly on his timelines of what he's able to do. You know, the Falcon Heavy was delayed and delayed. He keeps talking about Mars as if it's going to happen sometime soon, but that keeps getting pushed back. Their program to fly astronauts to the International Space Station has suffered delays. So, you know, that's come back to bite him a few times, but I think on the whole, he's sort of become this figure that has made space cool again. I mean, I don't think you can do a direct comparison to, you know, a Neil Armstrong or a John Glenn. I mean, it's very different. But when you look to space today, you know, it's not like astronauts are household names, but Elon is. And I think he's really done that for space.
Now, they have had other setbacks, the death of a test pilot, a rocket explosion, sabotage. That doesn't deter them, does it?
Well, yeah, and the death of the pilot was with Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic. Elon has had two rockets that have blown up. There were no people on it and nobody was hurt. But yes, that's sort of a critical thing, that these were, you know, space is hard. They have suffered failures and setbacks. And, you know, in the case of Virgin Galactic, that fatality, and there's sort of a big question, would that do them in, or would they be able to, you know, sort of press on? And in both cases, they, you know, pressed on. And, you know, they come from a different culture, too, right? I mean, we're talking about, you know, particularly with SpaceX, you know, the sort of Silicon Valley ethos that you're supposed to, you know, fail quickly and then learn from your mistakes and pick up and carry on. And that's what they did. And there were big questions around Virgin Galactic as to whether they would continue on and whether it was worth it, you know. And then there are just huge risks associated with spaceflight. But, you know, culturally, they're also like, it's not just a Silicon Valley thing. They're kind of, you know, libertarian as well. And, you know, in one conversation with someone I had for the book, you know, he recounted a story that Elon was talking about how, you know, if you climb up Mount Everest, I mean, there are literally, you'll step over bodies of people who died on the way trying to get to the mountain. And yet, you know, as a society, we sort of say, well, you know, if you want to risk your neck climbing Mount Everest, that's your decision to make. Yet when it comes to spaceflight, the industry's concern is that there will be a reaction, you know, to a death, and that can come in and regulate and restrict it, or not, or even ban it, and really hurt the industry. So they've pushed very hard to try to, you know, keep the regulations loose.
When I think about this, though, this should go very much along with the Trump administration, and yet Jeff Bezos has been in a feud with President Trump, and yet we look at the old boys network requiring disruption when NASA said to Elon Musk, that's what it's going to take to open this whole game back up to you private entrepreneurs. So what is the tension there between this administration, which in many ways supports this more libertarian approach, and the individuals involved?
Yeah, it's interesting because there has been, you know, the criticism of by Trump of Jeff Bezos, yet that seems to have been squarely on Amazon and the Washington Post, but hasn't extended to Blue Origin, his space company, at least not yet. At the same time, what you've seen come out of the Trump administration, which, you know, reconstituted the National Space Council, which Vice President Pence heads, and they've had been very explicit that one of the ways in which they want to advance exploration in space and to, you know, really sort of capture people's attention and have, you know, sort of a success is to leverage all of this expertise and, frankly, all of these resources that these billionaires have to in order to get to the moon. And you've seen Blue Origin has had discussions with NASA about building a lunar lander, and SpaceX has been in these discussions about going to the moon as well, and then eventually on to Mars. So there's a little bit of a contradiction there in the sense that, you know, the Trump administration has been very open about saying that they want to partner with the private sector, and that includes Blue Origin and SpaceX and a lot of these other companies.
How much attention should we pay to what's going on the ground? For example, Tesla and its success and battery power and so forth, and Amazon probably fighting off some pressures to change a bit or to become less monopolistic, as people are beginning to think of them as. Is there going to be pressure on the ground that we will see reflected in what they're able to do in space?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you wonder, you know, if there's political pressure, if there's ramifications that could spread into these other areas of business. But at this point, you know, SpaceX is, you know, sort of a self-sustaining business. They've got a backlog, not just of government orders, but of commercial launches as well. You know, they've got a whole inventory of launches just set up. You know, you could see, I mean, the, you know, failure is always, you know, a potential, but if they continue their success, which they've had, and they had an incredibly successful year last year, they're planning for even more launches this year. I mean, that, you know, that could really be a successful company for Elon and be off and running. You know, on the same token, Blue Origin is sort of insulated from all this in a way because it's, you know, it's financed by Jeff, and he's got so much money he's able to do that and to keep this as a company. But it's at the sort of critical moment where it's building its next generation rocket, the New Glenn, which will be able to go to orbit. It will compete against SpaceX. It'll compete against the United Launch Alliance, which is a joint venture between Lockheed Martin and Boeing. And it could also be doing suborbital tourist flights, which would compete against Virgin Galactic, because that's what they want to do. So they're at a critical moment as well in terms of entering the marketplace, going after government business and commercial business as well.
Are we missing any other names in this process, or somebody who's a dark horse in this? Or what about other countries? Are there international entrepreneurs that we're not reflecting here when we're talking about Americans or those who do their business in America?
I mean, in some ways, this is sort of like a uniquely American story, right? That in the, only in the United States would you have these kind of billionaires, you know, pursuing their childhood dreams and going off into space and building their rockets and trying to capture the attention of the nation as, you know, sort of relive that Apollo moment and reassert sort of American dominance in space. You know, but at the same time, you do see other countries such as China pushing in space, and that, you know, in some respects, but particularly when it comes to, you know, the White House and NASA, could be a good thing in terms of, you know, urging them on, because competition is always a good thing. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're in this sort of weird position right now where we have, you know, all these geopolitical tensions with Russia, for example, and yet we partner with them in space. We partner with them on the International Space Station, and we entrust the lives of our astronauts on their rockets. I mean, Russia flies NASA's astronauts to the International Space Station and takes them home. So it's an area of both competition and collaboration.
We know that the truly unique aspect of all of this is their innovation with the reusable rocket that comes back as well as excites us when it goes up. But what are they going to have to show in your mind, and you follow the space program so wonderfully for both the Washington Post and your books? Tell us what we're going to have to see in what period of time to really keep the imagination of the American public focused on this.
Well, right, and you mentioned the reusable rockets, and that's, you know, an innovation that a lot of people didn't think was possible and, you know, has the potential to really upend the market and make it much more affordable, right? Because typically what you would do is throw away the first stage of your rockets into the ocean. You know, it's like getting an airplane and fly from New York to L.A. and then throw away the airplane. That would make airplane travel just prohibitively expensive. But sort of the next step is, and for all of the innovations and triumphs and successes they have, you know, laced in with setbacks, these companies have not yet flown a single human being to space. And that is going to be a huge challenge. Now, we did see it in 2004 with the Ansari X Prize, which was backed by Paul Allen, and people thought that was going to be, you know, the sort of watershed moment. But it, you know, we haven't done it since, and these companies have it done. And SpaceX has not flown a human being. Blue Origin has not flown a human being. It's possible those first flights could come this year or next, but that is going to be a huge challenge, and that's something that, you know, the government and the regulators are going to have to get comfortable with. And, you know, up until now, they've given them a lot of free rein, and the regulation that governs that is, and it's essentially an informed consent policy. It's like going skydiving. You sign your name on the dotted line and you're allowed to go skydiving. That's what would regulate, you know, like space tourism flights. And you could see it going, you know, if they're able to do it reliably and affordably and safely and nobody gets hurt, you know, that could be really transformational. If, however, there are fatalities, there are explosions and people die and they're not able to do it reliably, I mean, that could have significant consequences as well.
We're looking at space hotels, amusement parks, yachts, colonies for 2 to 3 million people. That's Jeff Bezos' goal. Do you think there's one player in this who really has a better model and better view of what the future looks like in a time frame?
I don't know that one is necessarily better than the other, but they're certainly distinct, and their approaches have been, you know, distinct. You know, Blue Origin and Jeff have been very slow, very deliberate, very secretive, wouldn't talk about what they were doing. I mean, to this day, even, a lot of people don't even realize that Jeff Bezos has a space company. They don't know about Blue Origin. And, you know, they focus first on, you know, a developmental program, a relatively small rocket that goes a relatively short distance just, you know, to the edge of space and coming back and doing those suborbital jaunts. Then they would, you know, work on their next vehicle, was expected to fly by the end of the decade, you know, that would be able to go to orbit. And sort of, you know, their motto is step by step, ferociously. And by contrast, you know, SpaceX, instead of, you know, going to building a suborbital rocket, their very first rocket, the Falcon 1, was, it made it to orbit. They went right to orbit. Some would say that was sort of skipping a step, but they just went right for it. And have been sort of, you know, I use the metaphor of the tortoise and the hare in the book, and Jeff is the tortoise. Actually, the mascot of Blue Origin is a tortoise, and you know it's clear that Elon is the hare, moving very fast, very impatient, and is, you know, making huge strides, moving, you know, to the Falcon 9 rocket, which is a workhorse rocket that flies these missions, you know, for the government and commercial companies. Has already flown is the next generation Falcon Heavy, and is looking ahead to even what comes after that, the rocket known as the BFR, and you know which a lot of people I think thought you know existed you know purely in Elon Musk's imagination, but then the other day he tweeted you know how they were building actual hardware for it, so it appears that it's coming.
Any conjecture as to when the first manned flight might be?
Well, so, you know, for Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic, they want to do their tourist flights and their first test flights. That could come this year or next, depending on their progress. I mean, Richard Branson has been saying he's getting impatient, really wants to start flying. Virgin Galactic hit a big milestone with its Spaceship Two spacecraft just the other day. And it was the first time they had flown the spacecraft and powered the engines, and they went nearly Mach 2, which was their first flight since they had that fatal accident that killed the pilot in 2014. Elon Musk and SpaceX are you know aiming to fly NASA's astronauts in the Commercial Crew program to the International Space Station. Their first flight currently with a person on it is scheduled for December of this year, though I think a lot of people think that'll get pushed into next year. But you know the fact of the matter is that you know the timelines would indicate that you know this is all happening within the next year or two.
What an incredible trend that we're bringing to our listeners today on America Trends, private space exploration, and the people behind it, the Space Barons. Christian Davenport, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.